This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. I'm so excited to have Francis Beulah back on the show today. But this time, you know, I mean, Francis is a household name in Vancouver as a former journalist, but now she is actually Vancouver City Council candidate for one city.
Yeah.
She's on to talk about the city of Vancouver and the upcoming election.
This is an interesting conversation because Frances has been on the show a number of times. The first time we had her on years and years ago, Adam, I recall it being about the inner workings of City Hall and how things worked and the influence of developers, if there was any, and that type of thing. And she was kind of peeling back the curtain a little bit. And now she wants to be part of the machine, which is exciting because she's covered it for 30 plus years.
You know, we talk a lot about not only why she's going into politics at this stage, but also where she sees challenges at the municipal level. What's going on with housing in the city of Vancouver? What are some of the largest pain points? How is the current mayor and council doing? And yeah, we cover a lot of like hot button issues.
Yeah. And one thing I can say that is most certainly true about Frances is she's going to tell you what she thinks, and you're definitely getting the authentic Frances, which is, which I think will bode well in politics. She's authentically herself. That is for sure.
It is refreshing to hear somebody who talks so candidly about, I can't reveal that yet, or I haven't thought about that enough yet. You know, I mean, she's Polish, but in a very different way. But really exciting that she's making a run for it. And yeah, great to have her on the show today, Matt. But before we get to that, we've got the segment that remains nameless.
The segment that remains nameless, Adam. You know, we've done a lot of trivia questions around real estate stats lately, so I thought I'd change it up a little bit here. This one comes from personal experience, and we were both in the same place when this happened. Adam, when you are in your mid-40s and...
Wait a second.
When you're in your mid-40s and...
I'm barely in my mid-40s.
You're definitely solidly in your mid-40s. You're out for a night. What would somebody say to you that would suggest you're at the wrong bar? Now, this happened to you, Adam. And it happened to me. We were in a line. What is one line that somebody would say that would make you think we may be in the wrong bar? And we were in the wrong bar, but we were not in Vancouver. So it was by accident. What is the one line? But before we get to that, Adam, I'll let you think about that. You know, we're in spring break. This is usually when we kind of go, how's the market so far? And this week, instead of highlighting one of our listings, which we have some great ones, we thought we'd highlight a few sold listings because it's time to celebrate some of the positives, Adam.
Yeah, Matt, you know what? Here's just a rundown because, I mean, the market has been relatively soft. We all know that. There's been a little bit of an uptick, it feels like, in the spring here. But, I mean, check this out, 402 1003 Pacific Street, downtown. We got that under contract, one bed. 3337 West 40th. This is a Dunbar half duplex under contract. 201 1429 William Street, a one bedroom in East Vancouver is sold. 312 733.
Multiples, Adam, multiples on that one.
Salisbury Ave sold. 110 330 East 7th Ave in Mount Pleasant sold. Matt, it's been a busy couple of weeks, but things are getting done. We're getting a lot of sales. And if you want to head over to our website, we of course have the sold plan. If you're thinking about selling this spring, check it out. Sold stands for start on launch date. It's a interactive guide to determine when you want to list and the necessary steps to get there. So check that out. VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click sell with us and it's a free instant download. Now, Matt, back to our trivia question here.
Yeah, we'd love to help, Adam. What is, so just to refresh everyone's memory, what is one thing somebody could say that would make you think you're too old to be at the bar that you're about to enter?
So Matt, the story is that we thought we were going to a place in Scottsdale, Arizona on a trip with some friends that was age appropriate. We thought we were going to a place called Gilligan's.
That is the story.
Yes, that is the story. While standing in line, I noticed that we tended to be bringing up the average age significantly when a young woman behind us said, "What is this? A dad convention?"
That is correct. That is correct.
And that was Boondocks Patio and Grill in Scottsdale. So anyways.
Boondocks Patio and Grill. Yeah.
Never too old for your referrals.
that's exactly it. Maybe we should cut to our talk with aspiring city council person, Francis Beulah.
Enjoy. Attention realtors, homebuyers, and investors. If you missed out on Atlin at Clayton Crest by Zentera Developments, here's your second chance.
Atlin sold 80% in just 3 months, Adam. And because of that success, Zentera is launching Building 2, Butte.
Located in West Clayton and walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, prices are still low for now, but not for long.
Homeowners across the Lower Mainland are using equity from their current homes to invest in West Clayton, ahead of the SkyTrain and the next market upswing, because when that SkyTrain is complete and the market rebounds, it'll be too late.
This, Matt, is how wealth is built. Find out why Atlin sold so fast and register now at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown, and we're the founders of Oakland Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia,
serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakwin, please reach out to us at oakwin.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
Frances Beulah, she is a former journalist, a very notable journalist in Vancouver and Vancouver City Council candidate, past guest fan favorite, I should say. Welcome back, Frances. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. It's great to be here again to blab away about my very favorite subject, housing. So,
okay. Well, Frances, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself? And like I said, offline, most people will know who you are if they have a pulse in Vancouver, and especially the fact that you just announced your candidacy. But can you remind people?
So I've been a journalist for 43 years, 32 of them covering city politics and urban issues for the Globe and Mail, and before that for the Vancouver Sun. And by the way, I need to apologize to anyone who's actually viewing this in advance because my cat is on the table and keeps walking across my computer here. So apologies, but she is my biggest supporter. So anyway, yeah, so I've been doing that for 43 years after, you know, a wandering path through life. I got a degree in French literature while working as a commercial fisherman, and then suddenly got to the age of 29 and thought, oh, how am I going to support myself, you know, the rest of my life, and fell into like the best job anyone can imagine. But I got to a point where I thought, for my kind of capstone project, I want to do something a little more direct. You know, we always think of it, we journalists, no matter what the public thinks, we think of ourselves as providing a public service. And so I wanted to do public service, but in a different way. So here I am running for council. Very weird for a journalist like me to do that. I've never joined anything before, and now I'm running with this huge party, which is fun, actually. I'm having a great time, but very different.
So, like, even 5 years ago, was this in the back of your mind? Like, you've covered a lot of councils, right? The first time we had you on years back, we talked extensively about kind of the inner machinations of the city of Vancouver. Like, it's a long-term idea that's kind of coming to fruition, or is it something that you just, you know, in the last year came up with?
Yeah, I'm sure some of my non-fans will think that there's some kind of incredible long game that I was playing here. But really, you know, for the most part, just like any reporter, if you cover something a lot, you kind of go, oh, I could do better than this idiot, you know, or whatever. But I didn't really start to think of it until the last few years. And then, you know, I had some health problems. I had some issues that were going on with people in my family that were taking up a lot of time. And so I kind of put it aside and really just like actually only about a week and a half before they launched me is when I finally decided I was going to do this, because it was very painful to think of leaving journalism and then excruciating to try to think about joining a party, any party. So yeah, it took a while for sure. All of a sudden, everything kind of just speeded up incredibly. And now I'm basically standing in a hurricane with the wind blowing my clothes off in public, like your basic nightmare.
I was just going to say, Francis, from what I'm hearing, this is like a stage of your life when you decided to do this. You know, you said health and family things, and the desire to kind of cap off the end of your career with another kind of run at public service. Is that right? Or are you seeing things at the city level currently that inspired you to get involved? Or is it kind of both?
It's both. I mean, I've always thought of doing public service in a different way, maybe, you know, working for a nonprofit, doing volunteer work, taking on some project of my own. I guess the current circumstances at council made me feel like that maybe the city wants a change. So that was a bit of an incentive for sure. Although I won't say that, if Ken Sim and ABC were doing really well and everybody was happy with what they had accomplished, I probably still would have thought of it. But obviously, there's, I think, a strong feeling in the city that you know, maybe this team that's in right now isn't who we thought they were. And maybe we all want to make a different choice.
How do you see the move, Francis, from critic to politician? Like, what's been the hardest part of the transition?
Well, I know what the hardest part of the transition is going to be. It's going to be having to come off the sidelines where you're going, well, on the one hand, on the other hand, or they should have really thought about this first, or they should have done this, or they should have done that. Like, it's, you know, I love journalism and I've done a lot of that myself. But when you're in the public eye and you're actually having to make the decisions and actually having to vote on two shitty options that are in front of you, or making a decision that you know is going to be unpopular with even among some people who supported you, that's the hard part. And, you know, journalists generally don't have to do that. Even opinion columnists, they don't have to go out there and say, here's what needs to be done better and I'm going to do it. You know, they can just endlessly talk about what should be done better without having to be held responsible for how do we change that? So that's really mm-hmm. the biggest difference.
And do you think your background gives you kind of a unique vantage point to make those decisions? Like, I'm just thinking the last time we had you on was to talk about, say, the Broadway plan, mm-hmm. where, you know, it was like, okay, you covered when it went into effect, and then we had you on talking about some of the, you know, the negative repercussions of that plan. Like, does your background give you that any special kind of ability or insight?
I mean, having covered housing and homelessness, for example, for 20 or 32 years or 30 years approximately, obviously, like, I've seen why things declined so much. I've seen trends over the years. I understand the politics behind why for a long time Canada really did nothing about housing problems that were starting to emerge. I mean, you know, I have a lot of history, so I remember that. And I know what things have been tried and failed, or what things people have lobbied for years that they've been unable to get. So I do have that history for sure, despite the enthusiastic endorsements of some people on social media, you know, this past week about how I know where all the bodies are buried and I know everything. I don't know everything. I know what many, many people who work full time, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for 40 years in the system, I know what they're willing to tell me. So, but I think my advantage is I know the history of a lot of things, and I have a sense of what's worked and what hasn't, and who the people are in the city who can get things done. Yeah, so that's a plus. I mean, other people who I'm seeing on the slate, they have other advantages that I don't have. You know, they've done actual real community organizing, or they've actually worked inside the city, like Iona Bonamis. Mike Tan is the one who's done the organizing. So, you know, I have a certain thing I bring, but it's not, I'm not a magician, and I don't know every last thing that's ever happened in the city for sure. I'm really selling myself here, aren't I?
Well, you're coming through as an honest person.
Humble.
Why one city is a party, city? Frances?
Well, really, I am a pretty centrist person who believes in, you know, social, but things work best anywhere if people have a certain level of social support, so they're not scrambling for things, that they feel well supported in having their children taken care of when they're young and educated, and the city is being operated efficiently and providing the services that everybody needs. So I've always been, you know, that kind of a centrist person, and I have seen, you know, I used to cover the social credit education minister very positively because I thought he was doing good things. So I looked for the party that seemed to be the one I could live with, pluses and minuses to all of them. And ultimately, I came to one city in a big part because they chose William Azaroff for their mayoral candidate. And he's a guy who has worked in nonprofit seniors affordable housing for quite a while, and they've redeveloped a whole bunch of buildings in Vancouver really beautifully and without displacing their tenants. So that was very encouraging, and his message that he wants to promote like kind of a pragmatic progressivism, that he wants to create more housing choices in the city beyond single family homes and large towers. All of those kind of things really appealed to me. And I knew what the party stood for. Like there's, you know, at least two parties that are trying to create themselves out of whole cloth out there right now. And I just sort of felt wary. Like we saw ABC created out of kind of nothing, and everyone thought they knew what they were voting for. And then ABC and Ken Sim got in, you know, many people within a year were going, what? This isn't really what we thought was going to happen. You know, there were the park board, they suddenly announced they wanted to get rid of the park board, and their own park board commissioners quit on them. And there were all kinds of motions about strange things that are peripheral to many people's lives, about Bitcoin, or, oh, let's get rid of the natural gas rules that we currently have, which led to just a pointless brawl. That was, you know, ended up with that motion being defeated, the fights over the integrity commissioner, you know, all kinds of things that really people are going, why are you doing this? Like, I just want to be able to get around the city easily. I want housing. I want the libraries and pools and community centers to be open. Like, what are we doing here?
You know, that kind of speaks to the next question I had, Frances, but maybe like, what are the top three challenges you see for Vancouver right now? Or maybe if you're critiquing the current mayor and council, what are the top three challenges?
Well, obviously housing has been an issue in Vancouver forever. Like it was an issue back in the 80s and 90s. And the thing is, nobody nationally in the federal government cared or paid any attention. They thought we were just some weird anomaly going on in the West Coast. We don't have to do anything about that. They can just figure out what their own problems and solutions are. But housing's been an issue in Vancouver for a long time. Prices have you know, obviously kept escalating. There's been real struggles over how you allow new housing options in. So that's number one. And I think also that people just want to feel like they're living in a functioning city, right? Like the library is open for my children, the pools are functioning, there's lifeguards at the beaches, you know, the focus is on that. And I just feel like a lot of people don't think that's what's happening. And I mean, I even have a super small example just from my street. A tree fell down on our street in the last windstorm. We live on in an area with a lot of them. And that was almost 2 years ago, and they still haven't ground up the stump or planted a new tree, which in previous windstorms, we always saw the trees being replaced really quickly. So, you know, I think everyone has a little story like that where it sort of feels like, what is the city doing? Like they're not taking care of these basic things that I feel like they used to.
So housing, functional city, is there a third?
I mean, so what I've got on my little blurby things that I send out to people. So housing, being able to get around the city in whichever mode works best for you. Like I keep telling people, I am so pro bike lane because I'm a huge car driver. I drive everywhere because I'm always going to 15 places every day. So I'm very happy to see, you know, like one less car on the road and a cyclist in a bike lane. So transportation of all kinds. I really love the small businesses and the arts venues that make Vancouver an interesting place. So I'm a huge supporter of that. And my fourth point is the city has to feel clean and safe. You know, you can't have dense cities and attract people to live in them if they don't feel safe and if they don't feel like basic, you know, cleanliness isn't being kept up. So those are my four things.
Can we talk about the city feeling safe? Because that's been something that's come up on our show a lot in the last few years is people concerned about the, there's been a change, it feels like, in recent years of around safety. And what are your thoughts, like how is one city planning on approaching that? Or what are some ideas around safety? Like, do you have any comments on it?
I mean, you know, the problem when you, by interviewing me this early, like I haven't worked out. As I said, I've been on the sidelines. I get to critique, ooh, Project Barrage. What did you really do? Blah, blah, blah. Well, what would I do? That's a whole other, that's a whole other issue. So I don't have all the answers right now. There used to be, one time there were like community teams that were going out and trying to work with in neighborhoods to like talk to some people who were repeatedly sleeping in a doorway or someone who was repeatedly seeing that, you know, there was poop on the sidewalk every time they came out of their condo building or whatever. And there were community teams that were working to try to address whatever was going on that was, you know, that was making people do that. I don't know whatever happened to them, but there has to be something, and it can't be just chasing people away from one area. Like, you know, Project Barrage, one of the things I've heard is that people in the communities a little further away from the downtown east side and Chinatown, like sort of more around Clark Drive or whatever, they were starting to see, you know, more kind of public disorder coming into their communities as a result of Project Barrage. So you can't just be chasing it around or chasing it into other communities that everybody, you know, it just, that doesn't work. So that's something that you can watch and wait for in the campaign. What more can be done? And I know there must be people out there with ideas about what might be some ways to approach it. But, you know, and some of them are simple, like more garbage cans. Stop taking the garbage cans away. And when they're filled.
Can I just say that is an unbelievable thing about this city. If you're looking for a garbage can, it's like, why are there so few garbage cans?
And I know some people like in different parts of the city who are huge progressive, they're supporters of one city. And they're saying they took the garbage cans out near where I live, like in Crosstown or, you know, downtown or wherever. Like, and now there's litter all over the streets and that kind of thing. I think bothers everybody. You don't have to be in one party or another to care about that. Like I care about it. I used to want to sponsor like walk around and pick up litter walks. And, You know, there used to be a great program that Vancouver had, and I don't even know if it's running anymore, but for a while it was really popular in my neighborhood. It was called Keep Vancouver Spectacular, and they'd bring in a container truck and everybody from the neighborhood would do kind of a cleanup and drop off all the garbage. I live in East Van, so we have a lot of shit in our alleys. Not literal shit, like the other kind of shit. But yeah. Yeah, and that was really effective. So people just, yeah, to repeat myself like for the fourth time, people just want to feel like they're walking around the city and it feels good. Like they don't feel like, oh my God, what happened to the garbage collection here? Or what is going on with this person who's clearly in trouble, folded over on a park bench or the bus stop near where I live? This poor person who clearly needs help, why aren't they getting it?
You know, it strikes me that when ABC won, I feel like that was a large part of the conversation was around kind of that post-COVID disorder that we're talking about now. And for whatever reason, it doesn't feel any different. You know, I know that there is a lot of support for the police and if that's the right direction, but it does truly feel like, and maybe it is those small things, but it doesn't feel like we've made a lot of headway since COVID in terms of kind of getting back to where we once were.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are some things that have changed that everyone's going to have to deal with. Like one of the things that happened during COVID is a lot of the nonprofit housing operators and SRO operators during COVID said you can't have guests anymore because of the concerns about infection. And that has stayed as the policy, partly because these operators are trying to keep drugs and gangs out of the buildings. So the no guest policy has really, really something that all of them have moved to. But what it means is that when people who are living in that kind of housing want to socialize, people are congregating on the streets because that's the only place they have to socialize. And, you know, the city has in past years done some nice things about putting out picnic tables in some parts of the downtown east side, like Powell Street, if you go along there. And there's a really nice couple of picnic tables next to the Astoria on Hastings. And there's always people just sitting there quietly talking, maybe having a beer, maybe smoking or something. So someone needs to address, why are people out on the street? Why are they really there? Because a lot of them aren't homeless. They're just trying to be social and they can't do it in their own buildings. And obviously there's many other issues that are going on, courts, bail, you know, all of these things that the city doesn't really have much control over except to have a voice saying, we need a more effective way of dealing with people who are clearly seriously troubled and need something more so that they're not having freakouts on the street and so on. Like there needs to be more work done on that. And as I said, this is early in the campaign. I'm just figuring all of this out after, you know, being able to sit on the sidelines and go, well, that didn't work, you know, for years.
What about Ken Sim and ABC when it comes to housing, Francis?
I mean, they've been, you know, just kind of approving pretty much everything that staff have presented, except for the last little while. You notice suddenly anything that's controversial is being referred, you know, so I think there aren't going to be any controversial projects approved between now and till after the election. But I think that what they've done on housing is kind of just approved everything and haven't really tried to initiate anything too new. I think what One City is trying to do, which is open up the conversation a little bit to say, yes, we need a lot of new housing in this city. We want people to be able to stay here. We want people to be able to live here of all income levels. Like I've been at VGH more times than I care to tell you about in the last year. And so many of the workers that I talk to there, they live very close to the hospital because, you know, that's what they need to do. Like they commuting from Maple Ridge to work at the cancer clinic or in the emergency ward or whatever is really a no-go. So, you know, that is such an important issue, but we want to open that. I think One City wants to open the conversation up a little bit about, have we been doing it the right way? Are there some tweaks that we could make? And then I have some personal ideas. I don't know if One City's going to back all of them that I'd like to see, like community land trusts, which is this different way of owning property communally for the benefit of everyone who lives in that neighborhood. It's something that Toronto is doing a lot of, and certain groups in Vancouver are trying to get going, but they haven't had a lot of city support for it. In the downtown east side is one. South Falls Creek is another where they're trying to do a community land trust. I obviously support the idea of having more six-story apartment buildings, preferably with, you know, some level of corner shop or retail to, you know, so it's, we don't have these kind of deserts where it's housing, housing, housing. And then if you actually need a quart of milk or something, you have to walk out to the main street 10 blocks away. So I just feel like there haven't been a lot of new ideas. Like, they've approved everything. They're stopping everybody, you know, they're starting to vote again or defer things as we get closer to the election. But I haven't seen a lot of new ideas.
Francis, I'm trying to think of some hot button issues. One is, you know, you mentioned lifeguards. I think yesterday I heard that Third Beach and Jericho no longer will have lifeguards.
Yeah.
And the comment was due to austerity measures because of the property taxes not being increased. What's your take on the property tax freeze? Is that good policy?
That was just politics. I mean, don't even get me started. I'm a Saskatchewan person who's the daughter of parents who grew up in the Depression, right? And like, what happened at the city where they passed 27% in property tax increases over the first 3 years and then suddenly go, oh my God, you know, everyone's mad at us. I mean, it's like watching a teenager binge eating and then making themselves throw up or something like that, you know, so they can't seem to get anything under control for the first 3 years. And then they suddenly go, oh, 0%. It was so performative. It was so political. It just was extremely irksome. And besides that, it's not 0% because they said there will be a 1% increase for infrastructure support, which I think is totally right. And really, your utilities are part of your tax bill. Years ago, the city separated out utilities to make it look like your property taxes were lower. But they're not really, because property taxes used to combine everything plus utilities. Now they separate them out. So the utilities are still getting an increase as well. So it was just like a campaign slogan or something like that. And the whole zero means zero thing, like that is a campaign slogan. That is not how accountants and finance directors think about budgeting.
What about, and this is totally maybe stupidly off topic, but this dust up between Ken Sim and Sean Orr about being a, you know, drug deal. Like, is this actually what we should be talking about in any capacity? This, to me, seems like so annoying from both sides.
Yeah, it's pretty awful when anyone in public life is going out to other groups and actually defaming someone. Like, as a reporter, that is just such a no-no. You know, we get stuff all the time, like, you know, this person's done this terrible thing or that terrible thing. We wouldn't even dream of going with it unless we had absolutely verified it, especially something pretty serious like this person selling drugs or giving away drugs,
right,
for illegal drugs for free.
Just thinking about audience, anyone who doesn't know what I sort of didn't set that up, but basically there was an AI generated image of Sean Orr, the council person, handing out drugs on the downtown east side on Christmas Day or something like that Ken Sim ran with
and
is now being sued
to the Chinese media about, you know, didn't make those accusations to the English media in any public way. And then fortunately Lenny Zhao, who I think has a good heart, but you know, I don't know what happens, why he does some of these things, but, you know, he went beyond that to say that all of, as far as I understand, that, you know, all of the opposition councillors had problematic, you know, drug histories or something like that. Can't remember his exact wording, but, you know, I think everyone felt that it was really unfortunate to see that kind of inflammatory language being used in a bit of a secret way, just for certain communities. It certainly doesn't help bring the city together, or it doesn't help make it doesn't, and it doesn't help anyone feel like that we have a mayor and council who are out there talking to communities that maybe are fearful of, say, supportive housing or a shelter in their neighborhoods, instead of, you know, talking to them about, you know, why this is needed, or trying to allay their fears. Stoking their fears is what seemed to have been happening. And that is such an unfortunate thing to see. I mean, I've covered so many councils where, no matter whether they were right or left, the people in charge tried to do a decent job of not just letting people promote stereotypes or dump on unfortunate people who are having problems with their life.
Francis, you've covered every major, every mayor, every council, every housing crisis for the last 30 years. Are you optimistic or pessimistic when it comes to the state of the city and where we're heading?
Well, I mean, obviously it's a really hard time everywhere. The federal government is cutting back, feeling under stress. You know, we all are watching every day. Well, maybe not everybody, but people like you and me are watching where the economy is going. The province is obviously like having some major problems with their budget. There's no money floating around for anything. But I have to say, I can't talk about it publicly yet, but the things that one city has talked about what they want to do and sort of improving infrastructure and getting new exciting things going in the city has been really heartening. Like, I felt myself going, oh yeah, that would be really cool. We should definitely do that. And I know that's a huge teaser for you guys. Now you want to know what they are, but I'm not allowed to say it. But, you know, the interesting thing for me that I like in the party is it's not just about criticism of, you know, everything ABC and Ken Sim didn't do, but they've got some cool ideas about how we could tackle some of the issues and what new projects like they might be willing to really go to bat for that would be an improvement in the city, would add something to the city and be really welcomed in communities. So at the moment, because of what I'm hearing from them, I feel good about it. But, you know, it's going to be a tough slog because, as I say, you know, the government money taps have dried up everywhere. You know, the province said, we're going to, you know, put a pause on funding of social housing. And that's so crucial. I think I've said it on this podcast before. One of the things that people don't get is that you used to be able to build housing for extremely poor people and make it work financially because there were no building standards. Like, you could build tenements and shacks and, you know, all kind, you know, fire traps and places with no proper exits and all the rest of it. That's how the very poor used to be housed. You're not allowed to do that anymore. The building code, you know, kicks in very early. And so trying to figure out how you house those people in society who have maybe contributed actually a lot at their minimum wage jobs, or, you know, being the caretaker for someone their whole lives or whatever, like, they need a place in the city too. And that's going to be hard in the next few years because no governments have any money.
Is there one thing that you can think of in Vancouver politics that everyone agrees on, but nobody will say in public?
Oh, that's a really good question. And my brain cells just completely locked up as I tried to think about that. I mean, some people might say, well, it would be ship off all the, you know, super troubled people with drug and mental health issues to some institution outside of the city and let it be dealt with there. But you're not going to get agreement on that. You're not going to get agreement on all kinds of issues. I think what you would get agreement on, And I find it so unfortunate sometimes the way politics is polarized. But, you know, people just want to live a life where, you know, their kids' school is good. They're not stuck in a traffic jam all day long, or they don't feel unsafe on their bike. The community centers and the pools and the libraries are a wealth of places to go for themselves and their kids. The city feels good. There's interesting little shops. There's fun events. It just feels like a good place to walk around and have a nice, ordinary day. I think that's what we all want. And somehow we get sidetracked into fighting over peripheral issues when ultimately I do believe a lot of people want the same thing. Like everyone wants troubled people who are really struggling with drug addiction and mental health. And I've, you know, had some, you know, close to me in that situation. Everyone wants to make things better for them. And there are fights over exactly how to do it. Like they should all be sent to rehab, or no one should be allowed to move into social housing unless they, you know, are completely free of drugs. And other people are like, well, that's not going to work. But ultimately, I do think that there's more commonality than people think.
I just had two more questions. Do you think the city's in a better place today than it was 10 years ago?
No, but that's 10 years ago. It was pretty bad too. I mean, I've been saying to people, I feel like we haven't felt really good about Vancouver for 10 years because the last 2 years of the Vision Rain were pretty sour. Everyone was sick of them. Didn't feel like things were really working out the way they had thought. I think Vision was tired of the public too, to tell you the honest truth.
Yeah.
And then you had the Kennedy Stewart Council with an independent mayor and four different parties. And whatever they did manage to accomplish, and it was more than people think, but it felt like chaos. It felt like every council day was, you know, spinning the roulette wheel. Who knows what's going to happen? Who knows how many hundreds of people are going to show up to argue about some issue that actually the city has no control over? And then I think people were really hopeful about ABC and Ken Sim. They thought, here's this new centrist party. They say they're going to be compassionate about trying to improve public order in the city and so on. And I think there's just been this huge disappointment because they felt like, okay, we thought we'd settled on someone who was going to be reasonable, who we could vote for, you know, time after time. And we don't feel like the city's being taken care of. We feel like there's a lot of issues that have arisen that I don't care about, you know, Bitcoin and getting rid of the park board. Like, I just want to improve parks. And maybe, you know, getting rid of the park board did not seem like the automatic answer to that. And so I think people haven't felt good actually for about 10 years. And again, what I like about One City is the people I've talked to in it, they have a really positive idea about what they want for the city, like the good things that they want. And it's going to be hard to achieve all of them. So that's kind of where my head is at these days. I don't think other people are there. I think most of the rest of the public is, oh my God, what's happening? And there's all these parties and we, you know, we want to vote for somebody different, but we don't know who. So it's pretty tough for the public right now. And I know some people are fearing that the next council is going to be another weird mixed bag where nobody has right. The majority. I mean, that is one of the predictions I've heard that any one of the potential mayoral candidates from the, you know, could end up as a mayor, but with a minority government. And some people don't mind that. They think that's an okay system. And I think my sense is the public wants to feel like there's a coherent team in place. And I don't agree with everything they're doing, but at least I understand what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And I mean, this is just kind of going back, but I mean, one of the things that I keep hearing from people and often from listeners of this show is it seems like the impact of open drug use, crime, public safety, it seems to fall disproportionately on maybe a few neighborhoods mm-hmm. in Vancouver or more so. How do you think the current mayor and party are approaching, you know, solutions to basically share some of the burdens with some of the challenges we have in the city?
Well, they canceled supportive housing at 8th and Arbutus. So, you know, that was a pretty powerful signal to a lot of people that, oh, we're not going to let this stuff that's all over the East Side, we're not going to make these poor people in Kitsilano have to suffer through this. Now, I do happen to think that that building would have been more successful if they hadn't planned for 110 residents, if they had made it like the 40 to 60 size that nonprofit operators think that is kind of a reasonable number that makes it a good life for everybody and not too overwhelming. So, yeah, I'm trying to remember how many transitional and supportive housing projects. I think 3 or 4 within a couple blocks of my house, you know. So I'm a person who I actually think that they've improved my neighborhood. I used to have people who were homeless who were sleeping behind my fence, my back fence, on a pretty regular basis. And I feel like my neighborhood is somewhat improved, but I also see more like disorder on the street than I used to in Mount Pleasant. And yeah, I haven't seen what anybody plans to do about that, or this council at any rate.
Here's a final question for you, Francis. I know there's you have to get enough signatures to get on to the one.
Yeah, a lot of people don't get that there's this intermediate
Can you explain that? That what you have to do to get to one city?
Yeah.
And then assuming you do, what's the headline after your first term, or what would you like it to be? Those are kind of the two-part end.
Okay, you have to remind me of all the parts of that question, because for sure I'm going to start blabbing and I'm going to tangle myself up.
can you actually explain like the politics that people don't really understand here of getting to run?
Because most of my friends who are not that political are kind of confused, because they think I'm just automatically going to be a council candidate for the October 17th election. But actually, one city, unlike, you know, the way ABC worked and the way Karim's Alam's Vancouver Liberals are working, one city is not just appointing people. There's nomination races. So there were two candidates for the mayoral spot, and they had, you know, signed up members for months and had a debate. And then there was a vote and William Azaroff won. Well, now I'm in a party where there's 13 candidates competing for approximately 6 spots. It hasn't fully been decided yet. So 50% at least aren't going to make it. And so there's this whole intermediate process that a lot of people don't realize. Like a lot of my friends are like, oh yeah, we're going to vote, happy to vote for you in October. And I'm like, no, wait, you know, you have to sign up to one city by April the 10th and you have to vote in this online election in the first week of May, because, you know, if you just think I'm a shoo-in, or anyone who you support is a shoo-in, and don't do that, there's a chance that they may not get that nomination, that spot on the one city slate. So I'm out there phoning everyone I've ever known, talked to since kindergarten, to try to get them to join one city and, you know, vote for me in that election, because that is an important part. And I like it, you know, because it generates interest. It makes people go out and talk to others in the community. It's democratic. You're not just being presented with an appointed slate of, you know, like, I don't even know how some of the people who are appointing, who makes the decision. We don't even really know who makes that decision. So, and it's just kind of a fun process in some ways. I mean, yes, we're competing, but one city's candidates have been pretty polite with each other. Everyone's pretty supportive and trying to make it like a nice, you know, no, you go first.
Ultra Canadian.
Kind of very Canadian. Yeah. Oh my God, apologizing every 2 minutes. I'm so sorry. I don't want to intrude on your event. Good luck with everything.
And the second part, Francis, was the headline. Assuming it all works out and you have a first term, the headline you want written about your first term.
Well, besides, she wasn't too shitty.
maybe that's your slogan.
You know, because I mean, the thing is, housing is really hard to fix. And, you know, it takes years. There's stuff Gregor Robertson announced in 2018 that still hasn't been built. But if I got a headline that said she got these housing options, you know, in the city, these new, you know, maybe like a tiny home village or the community land trusts, or these are the three things that Frances Beulah changed about housing in this city for the better. Like, I'd be thrilled with that. That would make me really happy. And also not having too many people crap on me.
Well, Frances, we have this segment called the Five Wire, Five Lighthearted Questions that we end the show with. Can you stick around for that?
Oh, I forgot about this. Oh, my God. Okay. If it's about the last book I read, oh, my God, that's going to be bad because I can't read anymore.
Okay. Well, then we'll start with question number two then.
I mean, the last book I read that I really loved was... It was called Dream Something, and it was set in Montana and about a family that's living in Montana, and it kind of starts in our known past but goes into the future, and there's, you know, about environmental degradation in that part of northern Montana, but it's also a really complex, interesting family story. So that was my favorite one Doug, what was the name of that book?
Dream State.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Yes.
All right.
Number one.
Question number two. In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Oh, well, this year I did two new things that I'm totally loving. One is doing Tai Chi on an app every morning at home, which I'm finding super restful because I tried meditation, but it doesn't work. Like, the evil thoughts are always in my head. But when I do Tai Chi, I can't think because I have to try and follow, like, where is her right hand going? And I'm going for walks with people instead of just talking on the phone, like, you know, zipping over to Trout Lake and doing two laps around Trout Lake or along the seawall or, you know, all these places that I love going to in Vancouver. So that, those are my two new things that I'm doing, and I'm totally loving them.
And Doug, same question. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, he's so active, you know, like, he's Mr. Skier, tennis player, cyclist, you know, runner, blah, blah, blah. He's got all his good habits in place already.
Right on. What have you been binge watching lately or a movie recommendation?
The Pit.
Oh,
the
really? Pit. Okay.
It's so great.
Oh,
I love it. Yeah.
You know, I
on my own without my husband.
Well, I was just going to say, the one thing about The Pit, I started the first 5 minutes of it and it felt like I was walking actually into a hospital, which I hate doing. I don't know. I was like, oh, God, this is like something. I hate hospitals. And so I stopped, but maybe I'll go back to it.
Yeah. We started it and then stopped for a long time and then just started again. And I just love it. They bring up all these interesting social issues. You know, it's a very diverse workforce that you see. And there's these hilarious, like, Filipino nurses who are often speaking in Tagalog to saying, oh, my God, what a stupid decision that is. No wonder everyone here is dying. And every medical person I know says it's the most realistic. Anyway, that's the big binge watching thing these days. We're almost through season two now. So
nice. Favorite band or music recommendation?
Okay. And again, because my brain cells have evaporated in the campaign, usually I couldn't answer this, but there's this band I discovered because I was going to go to Paris last fall and there's this music venue I really like. So I looked at their program and they had this really cool band from, I think, Virginia or somewhere in the States, a little bit bluegrassy folky. And it's called Camp, C-A-A-M-P.
Oh, yeah.
And they're coming to the PNE, to the amphitheater this summer. So I've already bought tickets. And they have this beautiful song called By and By. If you have any time at the end of this podcast, you could play that. But yeah, that's my latest discovery.
Nice.
That's a good one. Last but not least, Francis, something you've purchased for under $1,500 in the last little while that has had a positive impact on your life?
That's a really good question. I think it was the AirTag for my cat. because during the summer, I left her with some friends and she somehow got out. So I flew home on a float plane from Hornby Island to spend...
Just to find her.
To walk around looking for her. And I didn't have an AirTag on her at that point. And it was pretty upsetting for everybody. I finally found her in a locked garage at 10 o'clock at night and was lying on the ground, like talking to her and, you know, thinking, I hope I don't have to go through this again anytime soon.
This is vampire.
So, vampire, yeah. So I got an AirTag and now I can see where she is all the time. I take her with me on vacation and she got out of the cabin we were in, staying in at Kootenai Lake, but I was able to like follow her around with the AirTag and eventually, you know, get her back again. So that was probably my best purchase of the last year.
Great one.
And I think it was what are they, 30 bucks or something?
Yeah.
And I had to get the collar, you know, a special collar that takes the AirTag.
Yeah.
In it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a good one. Adam, you had a missing cat, what, was that a year ago as well? Devastating.
Yeah,
but you found your cat.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. And it's
well,
so
he came back.
Traumatizing. Oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Depending on how you feel.
She won't leave the house because I think she was so terrified by the whole experience. Anyway, those were great questions. Thanks.
Well, I guess, and Francis, so you do have a website now. If people are interested, I obviously in registering for One City or learning more about your campaign, where should they go?
Oh, thank you so much for letting me have free advertising here. I really appreciate it. And the bribe will be in the mail. It's Francis Beula, FrancesBeula, for council.ca. So, and that has some more information about me and my family and what I stand for on certain things and a place to buy a membership that they know has come in through me and anything else that you might need to know. So thanks for that.
Well, you're always welcome on our show, whatever you're doing. So yeah.
Can you imagine if I do get onto council and I'm like getting... like spending 8 hours a day listening to like housing reports and stuff. Oh my God, I'm going to have so much to tell
okay.
you guys.
You got my vote. You got my vote. So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with aspiring city council person for One City, Francis Beula, and past guest fan favorite.
Yeah, I always love having Frances on the show. It's such a breath of fresh air. She's very positive, lovely to talk to, and really understands the city, but also she doesn't claim to have all the answers, which I appreciate, but very thoughtful guest.
Yeah, candid, thoughtful, and authentic. That is for sure.
Yes.
And a treasure. A Vancouver treasure.
No kidding.
I would say, Adam. So yeah, great having Francis on.
No kidding. You got to think like just how many people go into the voting booth and say, hey, I recognize that name. There's so many people you have to pick for the candidates. I mean, you know, it's like, oh, John Stewart. Like, you know, it's not the John Stewart, but even the familiar, even the fact that I've heard that name before, you want to tick that box if you haven't done your research. So I feel like name recognition goes a long way.
Unless it's Roller Girl, Adam. Roller Girl is one you don't want to check. Yeah. but other than that.
Yeah. What else do we got, Matt, before we cut for the day?
There's only one other thing we have, and that is to reiterate what we've said a few times on the show recently. We have worked with so many people from the podcast over the years and had such great experiences, and I believe it was a great experience all around. We do have 5-star reviews at Google. We would love to work with other people that find value in this show or need real estate services for buying and for selling. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com and you can sign up for our resources there or get in touch. And if you want to try me, you can always do so at 778-847-2854 or Matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, that's another great episode. We've got some great ones coming up. Lots of amazing guests. So stay tuned and we'll see you back next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.